Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and thanks for joining me today as we talk about subjects which directly impact our lives. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. You can also listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I'm also launching a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which will be available on iHeart starting sometime in September. Aspects of Spirituality will be addressing numerous spiritual topics in short weekly podcasts. You can request topics for both shows when you go to my website. In all of my readings, one of the wisest and most interesting authors I ever came across was Manly P. Hall. He was born in 1901 and died in 1990. In his long career, spanning more than 70 years of dynamic public activity, Mr. Hall delivered over 8,000 lectures in the United States and abroad, authored some 150 books and essays, and wrote countless magazine articles. Many of Mr. Hall's lectures have been transcribed and are available as pamphlets. He is perhaps best known for his 1928 classic, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, an encyclopedia of the world's wisdom traditions and symbolic disciplines, which he wrote when he was only 28 years old. Mr. Hall founded the Philosophical Research Society in 1934, a nonprofit organization dedicated to the dissemination of useful knowledge in the fields of philosophy, comparative religion, and psychology. Today's guest is Dr. Obadiah Harris, founder and president of the University of Philosophical Research, which is built upon the traditions of Manly P. Hall. Dr. Harris holds a PhD from Michigan University and has a master's from Arizona State University. Dr. Harris is the author of The Simple Road, a handbook for the contemporary seeker. Dr. Obadiah Harris. Welcome to the show, Obadiah.
Hey, good. All right.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
I said it's in my heart to hear those good words about Manly Hall.
Oh, yeah, he was a fine person. How does the Philosophical Research Society and the University of Philosophic Research, how do they connect? How do they relate to each other?
Well, they're directly connected. It was really something that Manly Hall wanted most of his life, but he didn't. You know, the man didn't have any credentials. All he had was wisdom. and that was his handicap.
Yeah.
So he envisioned this place. He left a 50-year time capsule in the cornerstone of the auditorium, and he asked it to be opened by someone who was here. So I happened to be that person, and the first paper that rolled out of the capsule was his vision of the future, and that vision of the future was a school that a person could get their graduate degrees in without leaving home. And that sounds like kind of presence of mind, but I don't think so. I just think he was so well informed that he knew that was the next step for this institution.
Yeah, he's an amazingly wise person. Now, he died 26 years ago. Did you know him personally?
No, I didn't. I knew of him and about him. I was a professor at Arizona State University at the time, and I was known as having some authority in wisdom traditions. And so the board sort of looked me up, and it so happened that I was about ready to retire, and they talked me into retiring and starting a university, getting all the accreditations and all that, which, as you know, is quite complicated.
Right.
But it went over very smoothly, very just like it was supposed to be. And so the society does exist, of course, but it's sort of turned into an accredited university right here in Los Angeles. And it's wonderful because I'm now developing a PhD for the agency that accredits our school. They've asked me to do that, and it's a privilege to do so.
Yeah, I could imagine. Now, I've read and probably own about everything that I could find that Manly P. Hall wrote. And I still find myself going back and rereading some of his material from time to time. And I particularly liked his lectures on ancient philosophy for some reason or other. Do you have any favorite books of his?
Well, that's one of mine, too, because that he did that in 1929.
Oh, did he? Okay.
And because he did that for those who wanted to teach universal spirituality, and it's so well written, and so appropriate for people who want to learn. That sounds funny because you'd think everybody wants to learn, but I guess we do in our own way. But that's an excellent book. I hate to say this, but I just like all of his books because
it's the way he writes. It's mm-hmm. so beautiful, and he, you know, and even if you understand the concept before you read it, one, you understand it better, but you love the way he says it. He had a marvelous way with words.
Well, he did. You know, he said we're here to learn and grow and share, and you know that one line is enough to save you a lot of wasted effort.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Now, how does theosophy compare or differ to the philosophy that you teach and Manly spoke of?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It doesn't contradict at all. In fact, as you know, philosophy is the love of wisdom. And I think that it's that love that's is so important, and because it separates you from the masses and gives you a sense of individuality. In fact, and today, if I can do so, I want to talk about the highest quality of love, which is psychic love.
And that's why don't you do that? Why don't you do that right now? That sounds very good.
All right. And I'll start off then with a kind of a poem or prayer.
Okay.
And quiet now, spilled of all demand, content that there is none but you, joyous that all is you. Reveal thyself to one who loves you. Be my constant companion. Do not leave my side. Or depart from my heart. If you're gone, I'm lost. If you're present, I'm found. If you speak, I listen. If you are silent, I cannot hear. Rise, O divine victor, and conquer in me. Make me strong to be ever in your ways, to bind myself on the altar of your love. There to kindle and consume all that is spurned by you. Let the bruises of the past and the unholy be burnt to ashes, and their flame and smoke rise as a symbol of sacrifice to you. Let me stand before your altar, perfect, living as you live, joyful as you're joyful, loving as you love, virtuous as you are virtuous, eternal as you are eternal. It's this psychic or soul love that unites us with the divine, and the key to the full expression of the healing power. What is the secret of psychic love? It is to live inwardly rather than always in the external. In the way we evoke the power of the soul love within, united with the divine power above, to fend off any illness which seeks to penetrate our bodily defenses, or which may have already gained a hold upon us in some area of the body. We must be aware that these illnesses are like hostile armies, ever on the alert to invade us when we permit any weaknesses in our being, or become fearful of them. These hostile forces are the symbolic devils, the expression of evil and hate, which Jesus cast out during his healing ministry. As we begin to live more and more inwardly, to develop more and more our psychic power, that power develops its own early warning system. It recognizes at once the first feelers of any attack of illness without excitement or anxiety. It calmly repulses them in the full assurance of its power to do so. Now, this is the important, very important, because it is easier to stop diseases before they enter than to throw them out once they have gotten inside. So the question is, how does the psychic love express itself in the healing process, which I've described? How do we recognize it? Well, the expression of love in the body is health. Love powers forth the radiant glance, the strong and graceful movement, the courageous rejection and defeat of all illness. The healing vibrations of inner love pervade all parts of our being with a harmonious sweetness that has a double charm and a double effect. First, it relaxes, soothes, and calms the cells and elements of the body in a way that medical science does not yet fully understand. Second, it pushes out of the body all the lingering malfactions of hate, pride, anger, and greed, which are a chief mainspring of illness. The next question that arises is, from whence does psychic love originate? Well, it comes from the surrender to God's will, which immediately takes the burden and the tension of healing away from our struggling human will and brings peace and calm, confidence into the individual being. If this surrender is sincere, and if we believe in the power of divine love for us to express itself in our healing, we'll be healed. And, all our physical ailments will disappear. Our energy will be replenished and our health restored. So what happens when it begins? Well, our mind turns at once to the doctor and medications. And sometimes we must avail ourselves to these aids. But if we have learned to surrender ourselves entirely to God, then our whole being enters immediately into the mighty power of divine love and harmony. And all indispositions with disease. The healing power of love has no injurious side effects, no possibility of dangerous and unknown reactions. It is sure of its actions and benefits, and all its results. It does more than heal. It recreates. Psychic love never expresses itself in pessimism. It does not resign itself to illness, but seeks victory over it. There are some of the, people who are palpable of being cheerful and full of faith while enduring serious or chronic illness. Theirs is a victory, but not the highest victory. It's a conquest within, but not without. They have obtained a certain poise, but not the external victory over disease, which is necessary. Our aim should be not to capitulate, not to be a resigned sufferer, but to conquer the illness and to possess vibrant health and full vigor.
Now you say in your book, and the book is the simple road.
That's right.
You say that we need to reject the ego and accept what comes from the soul.
That's right.
How do we know what comes from the ego?
We know what comes from the ego because it always has a selfish interest, and it sort of asserts itself in all kinds of behavior that are totally self-interest, and if we have that surrender to the divine, we release that possession or that obsession, and we find ourselves in a place of selflessness. It's almost without our personality. But I know that in my life, in the last 50 years, I've had more self-expression, which is above self-interest. You know, just like here at PRS, as I call it, I've been here 23 years now, and I've never cashed a check. I've never needed to. I don't even think about money, but I have plenty of money. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. You know, you have a section in your book on guilt, and you know, theologies you know, push the concept of sin, and you know, which leaves many people with a feeling of guilt. Well, you know, why is guilt so strong a message in the Western religions?
You know, it's not in Buddhism, and it's not in Hinduism, and it's not in other forms of manifestation of religion. But I think that from time almost immemorial, I think we've just ground it into our psychic system, you know, and it's very interesting because you can't imagine the amount of suffering that's attached to it.
People, I agree with that.
You know, and you know, guilt doesn't serve very well anymore to the American people or to anyone, because
you think people are getting farther and farther away from it? You think they're beginning to
I think it's less emphasized and less popular, and we found ways. You know, like Manly Hall, we found ways that we can express ourselves without any sense of guilt. We can get closer to nature, and we can recognize that actually the power of guilt is ground into your conscience, you might say, is people suffer from it for a lifetime and yeah. Never really get to enjoy fully what their nature really is.
How about forgiveness? You know, you had a section in your book on forgiveness. What role does forgiveness play in our spiritual growth, do you think?
Oh, I think it has a lot to do with it. I think if you learn how to forgive and forget, you'll become a healthier, happier, more spontaneous person. And the happiest people that we know are those who have totally forgiven. It's just that way.
Yeah.
And I think modern psychology has helped, but I think the greatest help is to develop the psychic love, because you know that Brahman or God or love is in us whole and entire. And if we recognize that, it's amazing what kind of free life we have of all that sin and guilt and suffering.
Yeah.
It doesn't serve modern man very well.
You know, Hall thought that mankind spent their lives chasing trivialities. So So they created a god concerned with trivialities, things yes. like, and his example, or one of them that I remember, is like keeping one's eyes open during grace. Do you think the theology is still focused too much on the trivialities? Or do you see that changing in mankind becoming a more sophisticated spiritual consumer?
Yes, I do. And I think that the people like you and me and others who teach people who are not totally dogmatic and captured by those kind of trivialities, I think that we have, that sounds like a little bit self-serving, but it seems like we have a better chance. You know, like Manly Hall, he could write on anything.
He could.
And write freely on it. And write in such a way that people didn't feel like that they were being preached at or condemned. There was no condemnation in Manly Hall.
Yeah, I get that too. Maybe that's why I enjoy going back and reading him again and again. And you know, you learn something every time. You know, every time you go back and reread what he had written and you had read. You know, before, you know, one of the things that he wrote a lot about ethics, and one of his things, he says, honesty is what we do to meet the law, but integrity is what we do because it's right. And Hall felt that integrity was the key virtue we need to live by. Is ethics a big a big part of what you teach at the University of Philosophy?
Yes, it is. Research? You know, it's a part of philosophy, and Manly had a way of teaching it almost when you wouldn't recognize it. He, you know, if you ask someone what is guilt, you know, guilt is a legal term which has been introduced into the lexicon of various religions. And it may have its origin in some long vanished era when our more primitive selves felt forced to rely more upon the threat of punishment as the best inducement to follow the good life. However this may be, due to certain religious teachings of sin, guilt, and punishment, numerous people go through the whole life with guilt feelings hanging over them because of what they consider to be their past mistakes or those mankind is general, you know. It may be that their guilt is about something they shouldn't even be guilty of in the first place. Past mistakes.
I suspect most everything is that way. I mean, we're ignorant. You know, my view is evil doesn't exist. Ignorance is everywhere though, and
that's right.
And we confuse the two all too often, and we never really get punished for ignorance. I mean, some of our lessons may seem like punishment when we're there. You know, the divine is trying to teach us right from wrong, but it's not. It's just teaching.
You know, the last words, close to the last words, that we're told that Jesus uttered were about forgiveness. He said, you know, Father, forgive them, for they know what to do. So what killed Jesus? Ignorance. They didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
And when we realize that, then if ignorance is the only sin, then what is salvation except illumination, enlightenment, understanding? And you know, we can do that for the rest of our lives. I find, for example, that, I have a PhD from the University of Michigan, but I got that in less than a year. I already knew everything that they taught. And I found that knowledge is so easy to come by in this world today. If we don't have a fixed opinion to start with, if you can keep your mind open and curious and eager and relaxed, I think you can learn almost anything.
Yeah. You know, we live in a very complicated society. and where we're forced to make very difficult ethical decisions in virtually every field, whether it's engineering or law or politics. You see the obviously there, or medical, everywhere. You know, how do we teach people not only the critical importance of ethics, but how to make ethical decisions?
You know, I think that you have to approach that in a very comprehensive way, and yet it's integral. If you can see the connectedness between all knowledge and all actions, you can find a way to realize that if you aren't ethical, if you don't work at that, then what it is, you're dealing with dishonesty, and that's just totally out of the question. And yet you can see that everyone faces it. And I think that sometimes that we're so-called punished. You mentioned the word punish. I think that sometimes the punishment is a way to teach us ethics. And if we can accept that, then we can feel relieved by even what is might be called, a Job-like concern with life. And as you do that, well, you become almost your own teacher, your own religionist, your own critic. It's what is good is that you have the capacity to see right from wrong. And it's much easier to do it right the first time.
Yeah. See, I think ethics is the key element missing in our education system. You know, we leave it to the home, which is hit or miss.
Yeah.
The church, which, the clergy, you're not too sure, where they're coming from. Some are fine and some aren't. But we don't even let the public schools discuss it much. Any thoughts on that?
Yes, I do. I think that's one of the most unfortunate things about the educational system. I think you've touched on it. And I think Manly Hall lived in it, and he realized that. So I believe that if you can understand that it's real, some call it kismet, some call it fate, some call it cause and effect, but you live in a world that is honest. And if you don't subscribe to that, you're destined to have all kinds of dilemmas. And if you can realize that the world itself is honest, the law of cause and effect is proof of it. But we suffer when we go beyond that, go outside of that.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, what I would like to see is a curriculum that starts in preschool, if you will, that goes all the way up through 12th grade at a minimum. Right. And ethics is every bit as important in a daily discussion, if you will, with reading, writing, math, science, history. Then I'd like to see each one of the institutions of advanced learning, whether it be medical school or law school or the rest of them, each one of them carry that forward. Because I think one of the big problems, I was in industry for 40-some years, and you'd get out there, and all of a sudden you would get hit with a decision that you had to make instantaneously, virtually. Mm-hmm. And because we didn't have the background and hadn't thought through any of these issues, mm-hmm. you'd make a decision, and maybe it was right and maybe it wasn't. And I think a lot of people get caught up in that just because they aren't aware, one, that it is an ethical decision, or right. two, And then they don't have the background and guidance to say, okay, let's put it in this context, and let's think maybe a little bit broader instead of just trying to maximize the profit, you know, what's happening to the, you know, what are we doing to the people that are involved in this thing? I've been on a kick on that for a while. I really think improve society tremendously if we thought about it in a formal way throughout our education system.
Yes, yeah, so that formal way requires an education by itself, you know. Yes. Ignorance is abundant in the world, in the world process, and if we could realize that we really need education, and education must be laced with a sense of ethics, and as you point out, it runs through everything we do in life,
everything, and if we don't have the ethics, we don't have the education, no matter what we've learned.
Not at all, and I think that if a few teachers, and I don't want to just talk about Manly Hall, but I can't think of anything better at this moment. I don't see why we don't take someone like that who is not troubled with some kind of dogmatism or some kind of belief system that paralyzes the mind, and open ourselves up to a spiritual education that includes all of life. And
I agree with that.
You know, that's not so difficult to do.
No, it isn't.
No.
You're absolutely right. But the trouble is there's a lot of there's a lot of theological dogma out there that puts a lot of people off, and they don't see the esoteric teachings in these theologies. They see the exoteric, and
that's
has turned a ton of people off. I mean, it turned me off years ago. It took me a long time to figure out what was going on.
Well, it's wonderful what you've done about that. You have your own program. You have your own teacher. You have your own teacher.
And that
teacher is your higher self, and everyone has that. They just don't know it.
They just have to open it up and see it.
That's right. Yeah.
The one of the things I liked about Manly is he said that knowledge of the purpose of life is essential to right living. What do you see as the purpose of life?
Well, I think first of all he's right. And if we can accept that as the purpose of life, then we can save a lot of time and effort and energy by focusing our energy and our interest in that direction. And it's amazing how little effort is required. And I know that may sound too simple, but that's how that's my experience in life.
Yeah. I look at it as the perfection of the soul. And if you think of it that way, and you got to be careful with the word perfection, because that can intimidate some people. But if you realize you have eternity to actually reach it, you never. So nothing's really perfect.
Yeah.
Right? But it's the goal, right? It's where.
Yeah, even Jesus said, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect."
Yeah.
So everything is based on perfection.
Right. It is. Uh-huh. Now, he talked about, Hall talked about the cycle of necessity, learning wisdom through many lives. I think one of the key aspects of his view. Do you any comment on that?
Yeah, I do. I go back to almost his childhood. Well, he was his teenhood, you might say. He came here to Los Angeles to find his mother. As you know, his father and mother deserted him, and he was raised by his grandmother. And she discovered that he asked questions and said things that little boys don't say, and she just took him on as her job. Well, he was here in Los Angeles area, looking for his mother. And this doctor met him, and he just instantly saw that this guy, even though he's like 19 or 20 years old, knew too much. And he gave talks on Sunday morning over the bank in Santa Monica. And he feigned an illness. And he said to Manley, you know, I'm not feeling well, and I have a talk to give tomorrow morning. I just wonder if you would you be willing to give it for me? And Manley says, well, yes, I could do that. He said, what were you going to talk on? He says, I'm going to talk about reincarnation. So he says, I can do that. So he got up in the bank building, and he talked on reincarnation and showed that it was believed in and understood by every religion in the world. And that's what he did. He talked on reincarnation as it was taught and believed in every spiritual system of mankind. And of course,
and we've lost that a little bit along the way, but you're absolutely right, because if you go back into the histories of every religion, it was a tenet that was critical to all of the beliefs.
And it seemed like no one questioned it, and everybody believed in it.
Yeah, and then not every religion, but some of them, one at a time, took it out for political reasons.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I thought, just imagine a 19-year-old boy
being able to get up and do that,
having that kind of a grasp.
Well, that's one of the things that amazed me about Manly P. Hall is how much wisdom he learned so early. Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that his parents were Rosicrucians, and I thought maybe he got some of that from them, but he wasn't that exposed to them. So
no, he wasn't.
I don't know where he got it.
Well, he got it, I think, mostly from his grandmother.
You think so? Okay.
Uh-huh. I really do, because she helped develop him, because she saw he was saying things and believing things and talking that no one else that she knew was saying. And so she took him everywhere. She was a woman of some means, and she had a flat in New York, and she took him to the presidents. And you would be amazed how astute that woman was. If you get a chance sometime, or I'll send you one, he wrote a book on growing up with grandmother. And I tell you, it brought tears to my eyes.
Really? I'd love to read it. One that I never read. I never heard on that one.
Well, let me send it to you as a gift from the university.
Oh, that's outstanding. Yeah, I'd love that. Now, you know, one of the things that he liked to talk about was triads, and triads were important to Manly, and he loved symbolism, and he seemed to see the Trinity in everything. Is the Trinity a universal principle, you think?
Yes, I think it is. I think that the concept, the symbol of three, is very significant, and yet you find that theologians have sort of reduced it to a belief system, but it's about existence. It's about where we are and what we do, and if we can see that, we can see the triad of the universe. And I believe that, I think that Pythagoras certainly knew that. And
I think he did too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it's still current knowledge. You know, knowledge doesn't go out of date.
No, it doesn't. but it's funny that, you know, when we see it, you see the Trinity everywhere. You see the Trinity at the top of our government. Of course, our government kind of came from Freemasonry. And, so you get the executive, legislative, and judicial branch all balancing. And if we could just let one branch work, each branch works independently, it'd work fine.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it doesn't. But
you know, I think the triad, and I think that's a kind of language. It is a language, and we should study it like a language, because once you do, you can see it everywhere.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. You know, Manly, he devoted many of his writings to the mystery schools, and clearly he was brought up in them. He seemed to be most impressed with Freemasonry, or at least it seems that way to me. And
it seems that way to me too. But you know, he received the 33rd degree as an award.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, he's like,
the 33rd degree. For the any listeners that are not aware, is the top award in a top level in the Freemasonry. And I suspect he somehow or other was able to learn everything that was there. I don't know how he learned all of these things.
I don't know. It seems like he knew it coming in. I don't like to say that, because that sort of reduces the importance of a school, but I think that what I'm doing, you know, we're developing a PhD now with the agency that credits us, and I think that I just think he woke up a Masonist. I know that sounds a little bit unreal, but how do you accomplish that? You know, in one
especially
lifetime?
In such an incredibly short period of time.
Yeah.
You know, he had it. He had that knowledge so early in life. Well, I mean, he lived to a ripe old age, but he knew all this stuff so early. Well, I do believe that that knowledge, you can carry knowledge from one life to the other.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think he did that.
Yeah,
I mean, you see Mozart writing symphonies when he's three. He just have to assume he showed up
the memory of.
I'm getting quite a bit of static right now for some reason.
I'm hearing you well. I don't know.
I can't hear you now, David.
You can't hear me?
Can't hear me? No. It's a constant buzz.
Constant buzz.
Well, this is,
are we out of what kind of time do we have?
We have about five minutes left. Can you hear me at all through this?
Just barely. Yes, really buzzing. Let me tell my technician here.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm getting you pretty clear.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Well, he's getting me. He's getting me clearly. Now the buzzing has stopped.
Stopped. Okay. Okay.
Okay. We're okay
right,
now.
Good shape. Okay. One of the things that Manly said, and which I thought was really good, is he said that thought, desire, and action were the three elements of our nature, and he called them the ruffians, as he put it, and they needed to be tamed. And he said that if we could turn thought, desire, and action into virtues, that would be a huge goal in life, a huge accomplishment, and maybe the ultimate accomplishment.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And it's such a practical way to look at it.
Yeah, it really is, and it simplifies what you have to try to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you don't get overwhelmed by that, because you can see it as almost an eternal process. Well, perhaps it is.
Well, I think it is an eternal process. I think we just do the best we can, mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and then that's okay. You know, you don't rue your mistakes. You don't worry about what you've done wrong, because we've all done things wrong, everybody. But it's no big deal, because that's really where we learn the most, isn't it? When something goes well, we rarely know why it goes well. You know, we're happy it went well. But when things go poorly, then then we have to get into all of the dirty details and go figure out why, and that's where the lessons are learned.
You know, that's right, because who was it that said, I've learned more from my enemies than my friends?
Yeah, and that's very true. That's no question about it. You know, another thing that Manly P. Hall was big on is he seemed to consider man's ability to discriminate between truth and falsehood one of man's greatest gifts, although as he put it, it was rarely used. Is discrimination something that we as humanity are being taught, you think, by the divine forces?
I think so. And I think if we can read the divine text, you might say, the reality of the universe, I think that we can learn it faster. It seems to me that we make our lives difficult and hard because of the quality and character of ignorance in our lives. Because, you know, we're chasing after things that we really don't even need.
Yeah, I think that's true. Do you try to teach that at the university?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Any I tips do. On how to do it?
I mean, it's... Yeah. Well, you know, I think the best way to do it is through other teachers. If you can find, you know, you take from Manly Hall, for example, he had role models in his life. And it seemed like that they played a significant part that he didn't necessarily admit, but he had other teachers that he looked to for ethics and for various other things, and he didn't have to discover it himself. He could find it through other meaningful people.
Yeah, it's an amazing gift that he had. We have pretty much run out of time. Could you tell the listeners a little bit about your university and how they can, you know, what you offer?
I'd be glad to. You know, we call it the University of Philosophical Research because that's what it is, and then the board of directors helped me build that when I came here out of retirement from ASU, and we what we do is it's a wisdom school, but it's it has we can send out anything you want. Simply look at our website, and it'll give you all the addresses you need, and we will we'll respond to any inquiry that comes in, and we have bachelor's program of liberal arts. We have a master's program of consciousness studies. You know, consciousness is the knowing factor that runs in and through all levels of human experience and beyond. Then we have a master's degree in psychology.
So this is the University of Philosophical Research. So if they went to that on the internet, then put that into Google or whatever your search engine is, then they could find you and find all this information.
Yes, and we're an online nonprofit institution, and I could just give you this. UPRS.edu, and you can know all about this about this
speak,
school.
Yes, that's it.
Okay.
Well, hey, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed talking to you, and the best of luck, Dr. Obadiah Harris.
Thank you.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and past shows are posted on my website at davidgagan.com. If you want to investigate spirituality in more detail, I cover many spiritual subjects in my book, The Endless Journey. Also, please join me on iHeartRadio at Aspects of Spirituality, coming soon. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You're a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.